The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And he's here because he decided to be here, and he met that goal. You're a successful human being, Chuck.
I wake up every day and I set goals for myself.
Do you like just getting out of bed?
Get out of bed. Take that shower.
Look, take it across from Josh yet again.
Clean those armpits, Chuck. Done.
Good going, Chuck. You're a real go-getter.
Yes.
I have a bit of an intro.
Okay.
Slightly anecdotal. It's not necessarily newsy. Maybe this time last year it was newsy. But, Chuck, you heard of the Occupy movement, of course.
Yeah.
If you go down West Peachtree, you'll see like maybe 14 stout-hearted people.
Are they still there?
Tents. Still there, man.
Wow.
Yeah, hats off to them. But the whole Occupy movement, one of the big criticisms of it that I remember, and I think is still floated pretty frequently, because I was just discussing this with my aunt and Yumi, right?
Uh-huh.
And my aunt's an old lefty, and she has like very pronounced ideas about the Occupy movement, what a great thing it is and all that, right?
Yeah.
And she was saying, we were talking about whether or not it's successful. And one of the criticisms of the Occupy movement is that they didn't have any goals. They were goalless.
Yeah.
And so how could you ever think about being successful if there's no goals, right? So my aunt was saying, well, no, they were successful in like spreading awareness that there's like a plutocracy and, you know, there's this 1% and they're in charge. So they were successful like that. They didn't need a goal. And that's kind of part of the point.
Sure.
Yumi made the point that the Arab Spring that it was based on,
yeah,
all had goals. They had a stated goal, and mostly it was getting this one person out of power.
Right.
So there was a measure of success or failure, and most of the time it was a success, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it was an ongoing, continued goal.
Right.
So when I said that, though, when I was like, well, you know, they didn't have any goals, I felt like such a schmo, like just a corporate, like, dude.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they didn't have any goals, so they failed at it. And I'm curious, like, I feel like we in this country are very much obsessed with goals.
You're right.
And we are, we equate success with goals, reaching your goals.
Yeah. And not just here.
No, but it seems like the West.
The West.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we should explore that.
Okay.
Without any research whatsoever, let's just start talking right now.
Well, it was interesting reading in this research because I was kind of all over the place. Like part of me was like, because we're going to talk about, like, sometimes goals are great. Sometimes there's a downside to them. And here's sometimes you can achieve them.
Right.
Sometimes you won't.
Yeah.
I was vacillating all over the place with it.
Yeah.
Emotionally. I was on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I was like, man, goals aren't that great to set sometimes. You should just be mindful and prideful about doing great.
No, you can't be prideful if you're a religious type because pride is a sin.
What's that to do with the goals, though?
Well, you're saying you have to be prideful. You can't be prideful. You're hamstrung if you're religious right out of the gate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was talking about myself.
Oh, gotcha.
And then other parts of me said, no, you know, goals are great. And so I think where I landed was sometimes goals are great. Sometimes they shouldn't be around.
Yeah, I guess that it probably is context specific and individual specific in a lot
Very
of cases
much.
Too. But at the same time, I think part of the problem is like with this obsession is that we try to figure out how to streamline things, whether it's achieving goals or whatever. And so we try to shove a one-size-fits-all thing down people's throats. And in this case with goals, it's set goals and achieve them or be unsuccessful.
Yeah, and there's also sort of two parts to this which will be intermingled, which is personal goals and, like, corporate-type goals.
Right.
And it's interesting. If you look up goals on the internet, you got to go a long way to get past financial advice. Almost everything is like financial goals. If you're 20, you can think about retirement.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Or you run into that guy who's like, go. And for those of you who are like blinking in disbelief, yes, we're talking about goals. G-O-A-L-S.
Yeah.
And let's define what we're talking about. Everyone has an idea of goals, but we don't want it to get confused with something like drive, ambition,
right.
Intention.
Sure.
So say, Chuck, you are, you're like, oh, I want to be a guitar player. That's an intention, right?
Yeah.
I want to be a good guitar player. Saying.
No, guitar player would be a goal though, wouldn't it?
I guess. But yeah. You want to play guitar.
Okay.
We'll just say that's an intention.
Okay.
Saying, I want to be a performing quality guitar player within the next 6 months. That's a goal.
Right.
That's a stated goal.
Or I want to learn the solo for Carry On My Wayward Son by next Thursday night.
You better, man. You've got that show.
In my Kansas cover band.
You've been talking a lot of smack. You better be able to deliver.
My Kansas cover band is actually called Wayward Son.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Every Kansas cover band's called Wayward Son.
Yeah, we have a club. So where should we start? Should we start with the downside of goals and then some of the more positives and like how to achieve them? Or?
Yeah, well, let's talk about goals and how to achieve them.
Okay.
There's been a tremendous amount of studies since the 70s and 80s, especially in organizational psychology.
Sure.
The field of psychology is to blame for goal obsession, I guess, a lot of people say.
Yeah, and especially in the 70s and 80s. Not just starting there, but that was when people were way into that kind of thing.
Yeah. My family has this book, you know, the family bookshelf.
Oh, yeah.
From like stuff like that. Like
the joy of cooking.
What color is your parachute?
Yeah.
There's one that I still have. I've never been brave enough to crack it open because I don't want to like accidentally just get the snippet of information and I'm ruined as a creative person. But it's called, Becoming a More Creative Person. You could tell it's like a goal-oriented self-help book to become more creative.
Is this at your dad's house?
Yeah, it's at my house now.
Okay.
I adopted it.
Maybe it's like full
like
of cash.
Talisman.
You know, it's one of those books that's hollowed out in the center.
I've never opened it up. Yeah. So I bring up psychology because there's been a decent amount of study that under certain circumstances, you know, setting goals can be helpful.
Sure.
Right?
The problem is if you go to the internet or you get one of those self-help books or you start listening to self-help gurus, you're going to get a lot of information, and not all of it is good. But, of course, all you can do is sort of study and ask questions on people who do reach their goals.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to determine what is good advice. But I thought this one article in particular was pretty good because they listed out 10 things, only about half of which were good advice, but you will find these 10 things listed commonly.
And they are?
Should we just go through them?
Yeah.
Number one, step-by-step plan. Make a step-by-step plan. Two, motivate yourself by focusing on someone else who has achieved a similar goal.
Right.
Like, look at Josh. He quit smoking and he lost a lot of weight.
And think about me all the time.
All the time. Drive yourself mad. Number three, tell other people about your goal. You hear that a lot.
Yeah.
So you're sort of publicly accountable.
Right.
Think about bad things that will happen if you do not achieve the goal. I think that's negative, personally.
Okay, go ahead.
Number five, talk about the good things that happen if you do achieve the goal. Number six, suppress unhelpful or negative thoughts about your goal.
Right.
Number seven, reward yourself for making progress. Number eight, rely on willpower. Number nine, record your progress. Number 10, fantasize or visualize how great your life is going to be when you achieve that goal.
So those are probably the top 10 techniques, according to a psychologist named Richard Wiseman, who wrote a book, I believe, in 2010 called 59 Seconds about goal setting and goal achievement, right?
Yeah.
Those are the top 10 techniques culled from thousands of people.
Yes.
You want to give them the big surprise, the big twist to that list? That list has a twist to it, Chuck.
No, you go ahead.
Half of them are proven to make goal achievement harder.
That's right.
The even-numbered ones were ones that people who try those techniques usually don't succeed at meeting their goals. The odd-number ones were proven techniques that that Wiseman found were commonly used by people who set a goal and met it.
Right.
And sadly, in his study of the thousands of participants who had like stated goals, like quitting smoking, losing X amount of weight, sure, whatever it was, only 10% of them met their goals. But of those 10%, those odd-numbered techniques were the ones that proved successful.
Right, and he goes on to point out that you can't prove that that caused. It's one of those causation things.
Right, it's correlated.
That. Yeah, but
correlated does not prove causation.
That's right. So quickly again, the odd number ones. These are ones that should help you out. Make the step by step plan. And there's all kinds of articles on being concrete with your goals.
Yeah, and also it breaks them down into sub-goals or something smaller and bite-sized. So like this big,
sure,
amorphous goal, like becoming a good guitar player in 6 months,
right,
becomes, you know, I don't know anything about guitars, but learning this chord today,
yeah,
and then this. And when you put it all together and you've been keeping track and writing it down, it's controllable.
Exactly.
You're a control freak for doing this in the first place, and now you are able to graphically display that habit.
That's right. So make the plan. Tell other people about your goal. They say that's a good thing to do. Think about the good things that will happen, but they say to draw the line at, like, fantasy land.
Right.
Don't do that.
No. Like, once you find yourself bathing in a lake of chocolate, you've gone too far. And also, I want to say, telling other people about your goal.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, a whole website set up to, like, publicly shame you.
Really?
To keep you on track when you're setting, when you're doing a goal. There's this guy, I wish I could remember his name. He came up with basically the Twitter diet.
Yeah.
Where you tweet to your followers, okay, I'm going to do this. And then every day you weigh yourself and you tweet the results. And then if you've gained a little weight, everybody piles on you and calls you a loser or whatever. And
wow.
Keeps you on track. And apparently it's been proven to work.
Huh.
There's other ones where you log in and you track your progress, and as long as you're not a liar, it shows that it keeps you on track for things like quitting smoking or something like that. If you go and say, I had a cigarette today or whatever,
yeah,
this thing will actually deduct a certain amount from your bank account that's connected to it, to PayPal.
Wow. Or,
and they just take your money. Like, say, every time I have a cigarette, I have to pay $20. And when you go on and keep track, this thing just takes your money out of your account. And it's been shown to work. Isn't that interesting?
Well, because people like money.
Exactly.
Wow.
People love money. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I've thought about declaring something like on a weight loss plan to like the Stuff You Should Know Army, because that's a good...
They keep you honest for sure.
Well, but they're too supportive almost. People would be like, oh, it's okay, Chuck, you had an eclair. Like, don't worry about it. We still love you. It's like no one would hold my feet to the fire. You think?
You do pose a pretty... That is... I think you might be right.
I mean, people would be very encouraging, but I think they would let
right,
me
off. Right, no, I see what you mean. You need some sort of... It's too bad that we don't have, like, a fitness podcast or something like that. Those right. people would really hold you to it.
Well,
I say
I've got
try it. Dude, give it a shot.
Oh, I don't know.
Give it a shot. America, Chuck is going to need his feet held to the fire, and you're going to do it.
Well, on that note, though, what I'm doing now is I found that a poundage goal is just, and getting on that scale is no good. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on, like, literally weekly and daily goals. Like, I've got my little calendar up mm-hmm. on my refrigerator mm-hmm. and my little marker next to it, and I mark publicly in my household if I went to the gym that day, and the goal each week is, you know, four times a week.
Good for you.
And the week that I don't go four times, I'm sitting there looking at it, and it's shaming.
I think Yumi and I are going to go in together and get Emily a riding crop to smack your thighs with every time you don't reach your daily goal.
Yeah, the poundage goal, I had someone tell me, it's like, don't get on a scale. Just like...
Well, if you want a way to obsess,
yeah,
like, there you have it right there.
Yeah.
But it also works for some people. And
exactly.
We're coming around right here. Like, if that makes sense to you.
Right, right.
And you then do that. But it works for some people. For other people, it's just a little too much.
Okay. So quickly, the remaining odd things that should help you: reward yourself for making progress. And that doesn't mean if you're dieting and trying to lose weight, you reward yourself with, like, the hot fudge sundae necessarily.
Yeah.
And then record your progress. And that all ties into the accountability and writing stuff down instead of just visualizing and thinking about things. They say to be really concrete, like, write it down, look at it, make it physical and real.
Right. And that's why they think that goals work when they work.
Yeah.
Is they take things out of the subjective and put them into the objective. So there was a study from the 70s, Bandura and Simon. And I can't remember Bandura's name, but his name is really familiar to me. He came up with something else. I guess it was habit formation. But they figured out that they took a bunch of severely obese people.
Yeah.
And divided them in two. So the control group was told to just do their best at losing weight. The other group were told, like, you need to lose X number of pounds by this week and X number of pounds by this week. They set goals.
Right.
And they lost something like 50%, twice as much. The people who set the goals lost twice as much as the people who were just told to do their best. And I think it's probably because it's just saying, I have something to focus on, to pay attention, to quantify my progress
sure.
rather than... You know, what does doing your best mean?
Well, there's ambiguity there, because someone might say, well, I did my best, and my best just isn't good enough.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct. And then not just with weight loss. I mean, like, people during this whole goal-obsessed 70s and 80s, there were studies of how setting goals could reduce, like, accidents in the workplace.
Sure.
How they could reduce sick days. Like, it became an obsession with companies.
Yeah, still is.
Yeah. To basically say, like, hey, everybody set a goal and we're going to make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And there's also this thing called stretch goals.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
I hadn't either. And I was like, that smacks of corporate buzz speak.
So oh, yeah.
I'm going to look that up. And in fact,
low hanging fruit.
It was, yeah. stretch goals was coined by the legendary GE CEO, Jack Welch.
Okay.
And he basically said, like, a stretch goal is something that virtually unattainable goal that you give to your employees to shake them out of their ruts, basically.
Which isn't great, people are finding out.
No, but
for companies at least.
It does bring us to a question, though, Chuck. Like, the whole point of what we're talking about is there is why can't we just achieve our goals when we're the only obstacle?
Well, there's been a little research done on the brain.
Yes.
And research does show that the brain tries to protect you from change, really.
Yeah.
Like anything that's scary or fearful, which could be any kind of change in your patterns and your daily habits, is threatening, basically.
But not only that, like even, remember when we were talking about chunking and habit formation on the video podcast?
Yeah.
Same thing. The brain is looking for a way to streamline a process so that it can use up the least amount of energy possible
sure.
in carrying out something. And the way to do that is just get you to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Habit formation.
Right.
So our brains are naturally inclined, we think at this point in this point in neuroscience, to finding the path of least resistance in carrying out something.
Yeah.
So that's habit formation.
Aubrey Daniels has a book called Oops, 13 Management Practices That Waste Time and Money. And he argues that these stretch goals are not good for your company because he's cited studies that when people and departments fail to reach their goals, then there's a performance decline afterward. So you set up these almost unattainable goals, and it's sort of a big bummer for everyone when you don't reach them.
Yeah, especially if they've been really, really working hard to achieve them. I imagine there's like an aftermath where you're just like, well, what's the point in any of this if
sure.
we're going to work our tails off and still fail?
Well, and that's one of the points is that with goals, it's sort of looked at as a pass-fail thing. You could, I mean, I guess some managers are better at saying, well, we got 85% toward our goal, and that's really great. But most right. of the time, it's we didn't reach our goal, so we failed.
Right. And that's an inherent problem with goals is what we were talking about with subjectivity and objectivity, where just do your best.
Right.
Or raise $100,000 in 6 months.
Sure.
Right? The good thing about goals is that they take away that subjectivity, but at the same time, like you were saying, they set you up for the measure of success is perfection.
Yeah.
And that can be a problem for losers.
Adam Galinsky is a professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, and he is a co-author of a book called Goals Gone Wild.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Yeah.
But he has a quote in here I thought was really relevant, and he says that goal setting has been treated like an over-the-counter medication when it should really be treated with more care as a prescription strength medication.
Yeah, and I
like
think
they're too willy-nilly with it.
Right. Well, yeah, it seems like a way to solve a big problem all at once. And there is a dude named Sim Sitkin at Duke who did a study of companies that do stretch goals. And a stretch goal, a way to quantify it, say, is to be like the number 11 in-flight magazine in the country and to say you're going to be number one in 2 quarters. We're going to be the number one in-flight magazine in the country in 2 quarters.
Topple Sky Mall?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a huge stretch goal.
Sure.
And they found Sim Sitkin, who's got one of the better business school professors' names of all time, found that companies that engage in stretch goals typically are already desperate
yeah.
and embattled, and if they fail at the stretch goal, they're in big trouble. Like it's a last-ditch thing.
Right.
And it's a lot to ask of your employees, and it's kind of unfair. Rather than saying, okay, you know, what's wrong with our organization that led us to this point? How else can we do this incrementally? It's kind of like a Hail Mary pass as a stretch goal.
Right. Interestingly, too, they've also found out that setting goals that people don't meet lead people to unethical behavior, like when they're tasked to keep track of their own goals
yes.
and report, they will lie when they don't reach their goals.
Yeah.
Just to say they have reached that, you know, ethereal goal.
But it's also you're asking somebody in as many words and not so many words, are you a success or are you a failure?
Right.
When you're saying, did you reach your goal or not? And the other aspect of unethical behavior related to goal setting is this the idea that when you focus on a goal,
mm-hmm.
it's easier to compromise your everyday morality to achieve that goal.
Oh, sure.
And apparently, like that's a possible outcome of goal setting is that people just start kind of cutting corners and cheating and right. doing whatever they need to achieve that goal slash be successful.
Well, or do weird and dangerous things like my father who like ate soup every day for like a year
mm-hmm.
and that's it, like mm-hmm. a bowl of soup. What, and wore like one of those plastic suits around in the yeah. like July heat in
yeah.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I just won't eat anymore. Or,
right.
although he, I think he ate like cabbage soup for literally oh, like 6 or 8 months
man.
Straight.
Wow.
And it's, that's just not like, it's not healthy, you know?
No. That's a great example.
Yeah.
It's something he otherwise wouldn't have done. That's kind of dangerous. It's also, so it's dangerous. It can lead to unethical behavior. Another downside that people have suggested about goals is that they can keep you from learning.
Yeah.
You're so focused on this goal.
That, a number
yeah,
sometimes.
And then you're combined with the fact that your brain is into habit formation, so it's trying to figure out the easiest way to do this one thing.
Yeah.
That you end up with tunnel vision and you possibly miss all sorts of other opportunities
sure.
or ways of learning to do this thing better. That may have nothing to do with the goal, but would achieve that goal because you have blinders on. Goal setting often is related to blinders.
Like keep your eyes on the prize?
Yeah. And we're kind of slipping here in and out of organizational goals and personal goals. But they do share some common downsides.
Yeah. What I liked in this research was toward the end of it where some more forward-thinking companies are concentrating less on a number goal that everyone has to meet and more on what's called mindfulness, being in the moment, being present rather than focusing on the future.
So this part stunk of positive psychology to me.
Yeah, but I kind of like it. I think mindfulness and personal, like your goal for me, like I don't set goals like with the podcast other than do an awesome job. Like I don't, we don't have
personal
like
goals for the
no,
podcast.
Man.
No wonder we've been lagging lately in the ratings. Chuck.
Like the ratings are nice, but you and I don't sit down and say like, we want to be number 5 this week or we want this many downloads.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like you wake up and you just like, I want to do a great job today and be mindful and in the moment of that. And I know that's all hippy dippy, but
it's hippie talk. Okay, so for those of you who do want to keep your eye on the ball and you do carry out goals and you set goals, right?
Yeah.
What are, in addition to those, you know, steps you just gave to setting goals, one of the things that they have to overcome, it feels like, is procrastination.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting.
Yeah, this is a really good interjection here. Was one of the things that keeps you from achieving a goal is just putting off taking it up, right? And that whole like journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step kind of thing. If that's not working,
yeah.
You tried the tree falling in the woods thing. No Buddhist like
axiom
slogans, yeah, are working. You should hear about this effect,
the Zygarnik effect,
yeah,
or Zygarnik. This was named for a Russian psychologist, Bluma Zygarnik.
Mm-hmm.
Although I said that like she was German. I don't do a good Russian.
At least you didn't do a British accent for that.
Yeah, thanks. She noticed something while she was eating at a restaurant in Vienna, reportedly. She saw, and I'm not quite sure I understand how it initially dawned on her, but she saw that waiters only seemed to remember orders which were in process of being served. Once they were completed, they forgot about them.
Yeah, like if you went up to a waiter after they took the order and was waiting on another table and asked them about the order they just took, they could repeat it to you.
Sure.
But after they brought the food out and maybe the check was made, if you asked the waiter what that order was, they would have no idea.
Or they came back and they were like, how was your steak? And you're like, I had the chicken.
Yeah. And they go commit seppuku.
So she did a little studying on this and some other people, and this was in the 1920s. And then later on, Kenneth McGraw, 60 years later, did some studies on the Zygarnik effect, basically asking people to do puzzles and string beads together and do certain tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would interrupt them sometimes.
Right.
And then quiz them afterward on what they remembered doing. And I think more people remembered who had been interrupted than who had completed the tasks.
Right.
Correct?
And, yes, so that's significant. equally significant in that Kenneth McGraw study was that something like 90% of the people who were interrupted in the task and told that they were done, they didn't have to complete it,
mm-hmm.
continued to complete it anyway.
That would be me.
Yes.
That would drive me nuts if I, like, if they gave me a puzzle to do and there were like 10 pieces left and he said, no, get on out of here. Right. I would freak out. I would obsess about that the rest of the day.
Right.
And then forget about it.
The whole point of this is that we have some sort of drive to complete a task once we've started it. So the key to overcoming procrastination as it relates to the Zeigarnik effect,
mm-hmm.
Is to just dive in somewhere, anywhere.
Anything.
And they found in follow-up studies that if the goal is just too lofty, or if you really couldn't care less about the goal,
mm-hmm.
The Zeigarnik effect is likely to not have that much of an effect.
Sure.
But if you do, you're taking an order for money and you need to remember it, and you're interrupted, you're going to remember this, right?
Yeah.
To get around procrastination, you just dive in and start.
And it sounds like a cop-out to say the trick to not procrastinating is just to start. But it's true, and they point out that a lot of people can be frozen in, and I was sort of like this with my backyard when we moved into my house.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it looked like a junkyard.
Right.
Like a barren dirt junkyard. And it was literally one of those things where I walked back when we first moved in, and I was just like, where do I start?
Right.
I was paralyzed. I was like, I don't know what to do.
And then you pulled that first weed, and within 2 hours, you had a brand new backyard.
Well, that's the point, though, is start small and be like, you know what? Just let me do this one thing.
Right.
And as long as you get that ball rolling, chances are you will continue little by little and eventually look back and be like, wow, I've actually gotten a lot done over the past 6 years.
And apparently, it doesn't even have to be you don't even have to start at the beginning.
True.
Like, you didn't have to start at this specific corner. You could have walked in the middle and started messing with whatever.
Yeah.
There's some traps. We talked earlier about the techniques that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, some techniques not only don't help you achieve your goals, they actually are detrimental.
All right.
They're deleterious to you achieving your goals. I'm sorry, they're detrious to you achieving your goals. So, for example, if you make a goal way too specific, you might get stuck on that one aspect of it rather and forget the overall part.
Right.
So let's say you wanted to be a better guitar player, and that was your overall goal. But your goal was to be able to play Carry On My Wayward Son.
Yeah.
And you focus on it. It's just not working. It's just not working. Perhaps you just wasted a bunch of time, working on, Stairway to Heaven, that you would have mastered very quickly and gained confidence from and then explored.
Right.
And rather you're just facing frustration after frustration.
Right.
You also don't want to have too many goals at once because then that's just pie in the sky stuff.
Sure.
And then you also don't want your goals to be too terribly short-term.
Okay.
So, like, you want to be a better guitar player.
Right.
That's pretty good. Why not be playing sold-out arenas eventually? Isn't that an even better goal? Loser?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay.
Or, actually, a good example of that is with my little plan now with the weight thing.
Yeah.
Like, the weekly thing. There is an overarching 2 month and 4 month goal. So it's sort of, lines up with that.
Yeah.
Like it's not just week to week. It's week to week with a 2 month and a 4 month in mind, but not just 2 month and 4 month. Like I have to break down. I can't set a goal for a year out.
Yeah.
I've got to break it down.
But I wonder, if you set a goal for 2 month or 3 month.
Yeah.
And it was to like lose X amount of weight or go to the gym X number of times or whatever. But then you set after you set those goals, a larger overarching goal to be, you know, to have like some better cholesterol score a year from now or something like that.
Sure.
Would that work or would it set you personally, would it set you back in your two shorter term goals? If you then made a longer term goal after this, the shorter ones were made?
So like if I met the 2 month and the 4 month, if I made one for like a year after that?
Yeah, or you didn't even meet them. You were just like in the midst of them. You started to have them kind of like under control and you're like, oh, okay, I might actually meet these. I'm in the thick of them. Why not just maybe set a longer term goal?
I think that would work.
Yeah.
Which goes, fits in the model of achieving goals can gain you confidence. Yes.
Well, I just got my degree in organizational psychology just now. You watched it happen.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You tricky son of a, you know what?
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's see, what else, Chuck?
Well, I know that people talk about the younger generation, people in their like 20s and early 30s are actually a little more goal-oriented now than maybe perhaps they were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And is
that right?
Yeah, and I think people, especially women, there's a big movement for turning 30 is like a big, big thing now. And it's always been a big thing. But like there are all these blogs now where these women have these goals where I want to do this by the time I'm 30 or I'm turning, you know, I'm 29, I'm turning 30, and I want to get this done in the next year. Like sort of a pre-middle age bucket list type of thing.
Gotcha.
And I think that Eat, Pray, Love book had something to do with that.
And that movie, The Bucket List.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually know the guy who, I think he wrote it.
Wow.
He was a fellow PA with me in LA.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And now he's like some big time movie guy.
That's pretty big time. He had,
Jack Nicholson.
He was pulling the strings of Nicholson and,
Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But we know a girl, actually, a girl who worked on our TV pilot, Laura, has, a blog, 29 turning 30, where she wanted to do something new every day for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it from time to time. I think it's kind of cool. And they're not always huge things. Like one might be like bake a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Like something she had never done before.
In the middle of July.
Or one might be go skydiving. Like there are larger ones, but every single day she wants to do something different.
Every day, huh?
Yeah,
I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And that's both short term and long term.
But also, I wonder, though, like, what will be done with that? I see what you're saying now when you reference the bucket list. That
sure.
We have become, like, the 70s and 80s, it was very goal-oriented, but it seemed more organizational. And now it seems like it's transitioned more to personal goal setting.
Like traveling and seeing the world.
Just doing a bunch of stuff. Yeah. I guess the point is what will be done when, you know, that person turns 30? What will be done when somebody finishes their bucket list and then they're just kind of sitting around, like, waiting to die? Like, There's in this article that you put together, it was, you know, there's the pro goal mm-hmm. setting, There was the goal setting can be good and bad. Mm-hmm. And there was kind of the anti-goal setting.
Yeah.
And one of the things from the anti-goal setting seemed to suggest, like, do we even need goals? Do we need to set them? Or is it really actually kind of a bad psychotic thing to set goals, especially as like a regular habit?
Yeah.
You know, if you are overweight and you want to lose weight and you want to lose weight, maybe goal setting is a good thing. But if throughout your normal day, yeah, or your normal life, is goal setting a good thing? And I really think we kind of tapped it on the shoulder at the beginning.
Yeah.
When we said it's kind of tailored to the individual.
It is. With the weight thing, some people might do very well with a poundage goal and not do crazy things. Some people might do better with, you know what, I'm going to start out this week by not eating sweets and going to the gym 3 times.
Right. But isn't there also a voice in there somewhere? And it seems like there's not these days, especially in the West, for the people who said, I'm happy being fat.
Well, yeah, that is one of the things one of these psychologists points out is the detriment of goals is it sort of puts a taint on personal acceptance.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because the idea is if I didn't meet my goal, that means I have failed and that I'm not good enough as I was.
Right.
And still not good enough because I didn't reach that goal.
Yeah. But even beyond setting a goal and failing, is there a place in this world and for people who don't set goals, who are not like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo?
Yeah.
But somebody who, like, you know, has a job, goes to work, but isn't like out there like, I'm going to make an extra 50K this year.
Sure.
I'm going to have 3 kids in 1 year. Watch this. It's crazy. You know, that kind of thing. Like just setting goals that like this is my life and it has to lurch forward.
Yeah.
Somebody's just like, I'm pretty happy. I've got cable TV. It keeps me pretty happy all the time. My car's a beater, but I mean, it still gets me to and from work. I kind of like my boss. I don't want his job, but, I'm pretty happy where I am. My wife and kids love me. I love them. We get to go on really, you know, poor vacations, but we go on vacations
yeah.
together. I spend time with them. Like those people are being edged out by goal setting in this country.
That was me and still is to a large part.
Oh yeah, definitely. But at the same time, I feel like you have struck something of a healthy balance though,
sure.
too. I feel like you can make your life progress
yeah.
By leaps and bounds, by setting goals and achieving them. But I think we should all be aware that there is a cost to that.
Yeah.
And it's frequently your comfort.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Good stuff. I wasn't sure about this one. Look at there.
You put it together. You did a good job. I was sure of it.
You said lots of words.
So, let's see. If you want to learn more about goals, I don't know where you'd learn them on this site. Do you?
No, but we'd love to hear from you if you have encountered your own like 20s to 30s young bucket list experience type
okay.
of thing.
Chuck does at least.
Sure.
You can learn all about psychology at howstuffworks.com. We've got stuff on positive psychology, happiness, all sorts of crazy stuff. Just type psychology into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I said search bar, which means it's time to plug our happiness audiobook.
That's right. That is a goal. We recorded a happiness audiobook a while ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty good. It's got
yeah.
interviews. It's got, which is, you know, different for us. We normally don't do interviews.
Oh, it was good. We put some time and effort into it.
Sure.
My niece speaks. She,
that's right. Opens the thing.
Quotes the Dalai Lama at the beginning. And we got an email from somebody saying, like, that teared the listener up.
Yeah.
When they heard my niece saying that. And I was like, yeah, that is cool. But it's good. Yeah, we have professionals, and it goes all over the map, man. We
yeah.
We explore whether happiness is a good thing, whether
yeah.
it's a bad thing. It was just good. I'm proud of it. I like it. There's also our Super Stuff Guide to the Economy right next to it.
Yeah. Is that still relevant?
Yes, because it was about economics.
Okay.
It wasn't. We didn't even mention the bailout.
That's
I don't
true.
Think.
It was fairly evergreen.
It was about the money supply. It was about supply and demand.
True,
it was about
true.
Classical versus... versus Keynesian economics.
Yeah, you're right.
It was good.
Okay, they're both worth it.
And they're both, what, like $4 or $5?
I think so.
We're working on getting them elsewhere, hopefully, but you can definitely get them on iTunes right now if you look hard enough.
That's right.
Just go to iTunes in the search in the store and search Stuff You Should Know Super Stuff Guide, and it'll bring both of them up.
That's right.
If you want to get in touch with me and Chuck with your bucket list, you can tweet to us, a very short bucket list, at SYSK Podcast. You can go on Facebook.
Sure.
Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow.
The new timeline page that I hate.
Which you love. Ugh. I don't know anybody that likes that.
Nah, some people did. Some people were like, you're just old. You're resistant to change. I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
It's like, no, it's kind of clunky and weird.
These are the same people who tell you it's okay to have the extra eclair, huh?
That's right.
You can also set a goal to email us, and you can achieve it by addressing it to stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.